Chapter 10. The morning gloom had burned off, and the Pharaohs were enjoying a rare moment of sunshine that revealed the splendor of the island scenery. The countryside seemed to be covered in bright green billiard table bays. The rugged terrain was barren of trees, dotted by grass-roofed houses and an occasional church steeple, and laced by crooked stone walls and foot trails. Austin drove the professor's Volvo along a twisting coastal road that offered inland views of distant mountains. Jagged gray outcroppings rose from the cold blue sea like huge, petrified whale fins. Birds swirled around the lofty vertical cliffs where the sea had sculpted the irregular shoreline. Around midday, Austin emerged from a mountain tunnel and saw a doll-like village clustered on a gently sloping hill at the edge of a fjord. The serpentine road followed a series of descending switchbacks, dropping thousands of feet in a few miles. The Volvo's wheels skirted the edge of hairpin turns with no guardrails along the berm. Austin was happy when he reached the level road that ran between the foam-flecked surf and the colorfully painted houses built on the slope of the hillside, like spectators at an amphitheater. A woman was planting flowers in front of a tiny church whose grassy roof was surmounted by a short rectangular steeple. Austin glanced at his Faroese phrasebook and got out of the car. He said, "Orsaka, vor er Gunnar Jepsen?" "Excuse me, where could I find Gunnar Jepsen?" She put her trowel down and came over. Austin saw that she was a handsome woman who could have been between 50 and 60. Her silvery hair was tied in a bun, and she was tanned except for the sun blush on her high cheekbones. Her eyes were as gray as the nearby sea. A bright smile crossed her narrow face, and she pointed toward a side road that led to the outskirts of town. "Gott tak," he said. "Thank you."
"Angisk?"
"No, I'm American."
"We don't see many Americans here in Skalshamn," she said, speaking English with a Scandinavian lilt. "Welcome."
"I hope I'm not the last."
"Gunnar lives up there on the hill. Just follow that little road."
She smiled again.
"I hope you have a good visit."
Austin thanked her once more, got back in the car, and followed a pair of gravel ruts for about a quarter of a mile. The road ended at a large grass-roofed house built of vertical, dark, chocolate-colored planking. A pickup truck was parked in the drive. 100 yards down the slope was a smaller twin of the main house. Austin climbed the porch stairs and knocked. The man who answered the door was of medium height and slightly on the portly side. He had an apple-round face and cheeks and thin strands of reddish-blonde hair combed over his bald head.
"Yeah," he said with a pleasant smile.
"Mr. Jepsen," Austin said. "My name is Kurt Austin. I'm a friend of Professor Jorgensen's."
"Mr. Austin, come in."
He pumped Kurt's hand like a used car salesman greeting a prospect. Then he ushered him into a rustic living room.
"Dr. Jorgensen phoned and said you were coming."
"It's a long drive from Torshavn," Jepsen said.
"Would you like a drink?"
"Not now, thanks. Maybe later."
Jepsen nodded and said, "You're here to do a little fishing?"
"I've heard you can catch fish on dry land in the Faroes."
"Not quite," Jepsen said with a grin, "but almost as good."
"I was doing some ship salvage work in Torshavn and thought fishing would be a good way to relax."
"Ship salvage? Austin?"
He swore in Faroese.
"I should have known. You're the American who saved the Danish sailors. I saw it on the television. Miraculous. Wait till the people in the village learn I am entertaining a celebrity."
"I was hoping I wouldn't be bothered."
"Of course, but it will be impossible to keep your visit a secret from the townspeople."
"I met one of them outside the church. She seemed nice enough."
"That would be the minister's widow. She's the postmistress and head gossip. Everyone will know you're here by now."
"Is that the professor's cottage down the hill?" Yes, Jepsen said, removing a key ring from a nail in the wall. Come, I'll show you. Austin got his duffel from the car. As they walked down the hard-packed path, Jepsen said, You're a good friend of Dr. Jorgensen?
I met him a few years ago.
His reputation as a fish scientist is world known.
Yes, I know. I was very honored to have him here. Now you.
They stopped in front of the cottage whose porch offered a view of the harbor where a picturesque fleet of fishing boats was anchored. Are you a fisherman, Mr. Jepsen?
In a little place like this, you survive by doing many things.
I rent my cottage.
My expenses aren't great.
They climbed onto the cottage porch and went inside. The interior was basically one room with a single bed, bathroom, kitchen area, a small table and a couple of chairs, but it looked comfortable. Jepsen said,
There's fishing gear in the closet. Let me know if you need a guide for fishing or hiking. My roots go back to the Vikings, and no one knows this place better.
Thanks for your offer, but I've been around a lot of people lately. I'd like to spend some time on my own. I understand that a boat goes with the cottage.
Third one from the end of the pier, Jepsen said. A double-ender. The keys are in it.
Thank you for your help. If you'll excuse me, I'd like to unpack, then I'll go into the village and stretch my legs, Austin said.
Jepsen told Austin to let him know if he needed anything. Dress warm, he said as he went out the door. The weather changes quickly around here.
Heeding Jepsen's advice, Austin pulled a windbreaker over his sweater. He went outside and stood on the cottage porch, sucking in the cool air. The land sloped gradually down to the sea. From his vantage, he had a clear view of the harbor, the fish pier, and boats. He walked back up the path to the Volvo and drove into the village. Austin's first stop was the bustling fish pier, where a procession of trawlers unloaded their catch under an umbrella of squalling seabirds. He found the boat tied up as Jepsen described. It was a well-built wooden inboard about 20 feet long, turned up dory fashion at both ends. He checked the motor and found it relatively clean and new. The key was in the ignition, as Jepsen said. Austin started the engine and listened to it for a few minutes. Satisfied that it was running smoothly, he switched it off and headed back to his car. On the way, he encountered the minister's widow coming out of a loading bay.
Hello, American, she said with a friendly grin. Did you find Gunner?
Yes, thank you. She was holding a fish wrapped in newspaper.
I came down here to get some supper. My name is Pia Knutsen.
They shook hands. Pia's grip was warm and firm. Nice to meet you. I'm Kurt Austin. I've been enjoying the sights. Skalshaun is a beautiful village. I've been wondering what the name means in English.
You are talking to the unofficial village historian.
Skalshaun means Skull's Harbor. Austin glanced out at the water.
Is the bay shaped like a skull?
Oh, no. It goes way back. The Vikings discovered skulls in some caves when they founded the settlement.
People were here before the Vikings?
Irish monks, perhaps, or maybe even earlier. The caves were on the other side of the headland at what was the original harbor for the old whaling station. It became too small as fishing grew, so the fishermen moved their boats and settled here.
I'd like to do some hiking. Would you recommend any routes where I can get a good view of the town and its surroundings?
From the Bird Cliffs, you can see for miles.
Take that path behind the village, she said, pointing. You will go through the moors by some beautiful waterfalls and streams, past a big lake. The trail climbs sharply after you pass the old farm ruins, and you will be at the cliffs. Don't go too close to the edge, especially if it's foggy, unless you have wings. The ledges are nearly 500 meters tall. Follow the cairns back and keep them on your left. The trail is steep and goes down fast.
Don't walk too close to the edges along the sea, because sometimes the waves crash over the rocks and can catch you.
I'll be careful.
One more thing. Dress warm. The weather changes quickly sometimes. Gunnar gave me the same advice.
He seems quite knowledgeable. Is he a native?
Gunnar would like people to think he goes back to Erik the Red, she sniffed. He's from Copenhagen. Moved into the village a year or two ago.
Do you know him well?
Oh, yes, she said with a roll of her lovely eyes. Gunnar tried to get me into his bed, but I'm not that hard up. Pia was a good-looking woman, and Austin wasn't surprised at Jepsen's attempt, but he hadn't driven all this way to tune in on the local romances. I heard there was a fish operation of some sort up the coast.
Yes, you'll see it from the cliffs.
Ugly concrete and metal buildings. The harbor is full of their fish cages. They raise fish there and ship it out. The local fishermen don't like it. The fishing around the old harbor has gone bad. No one from the town works there. Not even Gunnar anymore.
He worked at the fish farm.
In the beginning. Something to do with construction. He used his money to buy his houses and lives off the rentals.
Do you get many visitors here?
Austin was watching a sleek blue yacht coming into the harbor.
Bird watchers and fishermen.
She followed Austin's eyes. Like those men in that pretty boat. It's owned by a rich Spaniard, I hear. They say he came all the way from Spain for the fishing.
Austin turned back to Pia.
You speak English very well.
We learn it in the schools along with Danish.
My husband and I spent some time in England when we were first married. I don't get much chance to speak it.
She lifted the fish under Austin's nose and said, Would you like to come to my house for dinner? I could practice my English.
It wouldn't be too much trouble?
No, no. Come by after your walk. My house is behind the church.
They agreed to meet in a few hours, and Austin drove to the trailhead. The gravel path climbed gradually through rolling moors splashed with wildflowers and passed near a small lake, almost perfectly round, that looked as if it were made of cold crystal. About a mile from the lake, he came upon the ruins of an old farm and an ancient graveyard. The path grew steeper and less visible. As Pia advised, he followed the carefully piled heaps of rock that marked the way. He could see flocks of sheep so far away that they looked like bits of lint. Towering in the distance were layered mountains with cascading Wedding Veil waterfalls. The trail led to the cliffs where hundreds of seabirds filled the air, balancing delicately on updrafts of air. Tall sea stacks soared from the bay, their flat summits wreathed in fog. Austin chewed on a power bar and thought that the Faroes must be the most otherworldly place on the planet. He kept on going until he stood atop a ridge that gave him a panoramic view of the serrated coast. A rounded headland separated Skaldshamn from a smaller inlet. Clustered along the shore of the old harbor were dozens of neatly arranged buildings. As he surveyed the scene below, he felt a drop of rain on his cheek. Dark, billowing clouds were rolling in from the layered mountains to obliterate the sun. He started down from the exposed ridge. Even with switchbacks easing the vertical drop, the going was hard on the steep trail, and he had to move slowly until the ground leveled out again. As he approached sea level, the heavens opened up. He kept heading toward the lights of the town, and before long, he was at his car. Pia took one look at the drenched and bedraggled figure at her door and shook her head. You look like you've crawled out of the sea.
She pulled Austin in by the sleeve and ordered him to go into the bathroom and strip. Austin was too wet to protest. While he was undressing, she cracked the door open and tossed in a towel and dry clothes.
I was sure my husband's clothes would fit, she said approvingly when Austin ventured out in the shirt and pants. He was a big man like you. While Pia set the table, Austin spread his clothes out next to a wood stove, then stood practically on top of it, basking in the heat, until she informed him that dinner was ready. The baked, fresh cod melted in his mouth. They washed dinner down with a light homemade white wine. Dessert was a sweet raisin pudding. Over their meal, she talked about her life in the Faroes, and Austin told her a little about his Numa work. She was fascinated by his travels to exotic places for his Numa assignments.
"I forgot to ask. Did you have a good walk, even with the rain?" Pia said as she cleared the dishes.
"I climbed to the top of the cliffs.
The views were incredible."
"I saw the fish farm you mentioned. Do they allow visitors?"
"Oh, no," Pia said with a shake of her head. "They don't let anyone in. Like I said before, none of the village men work there. There's a road along the shore that they used when they were building, but it's blocked off with a high fence. Everything comes and goes by sea. They say it's like a separate town out there."
"Sounds interesting. Too bad no one can get in." Pia refilled Austin's glass and gave him a sly look.
"I could get in a minute if I wanted to, through the mermaid's gate."
He shook his head, unsure he had heard her correctly.
"The mermaid's gate?"
"That's what my father used to call the natural arch at the edge of the old harbor. He used to take me out sometimes in his boat, and we'd go there. He never took me in. It's dangerous because of the currents and rocks. Some men have drowned trying to go through the gate, so the fishermen stay away. They say it's haunted by the souls of the dead. You can hear them moaning, but it's only the way the wind blows through the caves."
"It sounds as if your father wasn't afraid of ghosts."
"He wasn't afraid of anything."
"What do these caves have to do with the fish farm?"
"It's a way to go in. One cave joins others that lead to the old harbor. My father said there are paintings on the walls."
"Wait, I'll show you."
She went to a bookcase and took out an old family album. Tucked between pages of photos was a sheet of paper, which she unfolded and spread on the table. Drawn on the paper were rough sketches of bison and deer. More interesting to Austin were depictions of long, graceful boats powered by sail and oar.
"These are very old drawings," Austin said, although he was unable to place them in time.
"Did your father show them to anyone else?"
"Not outside the family. He wanted the caves kept a secret because he was afraid they would get ruined if people knew about them."
"Then the caves can't be entered from the land side."
"There was a way, but it was blocked with boulders. My father said it would be no problem to move them. He wanted to get some scientists in from the university so it would be done right. But he died in a storm."
"I'm sorry."
Pia smiled. "Like I said, he wasn't afraid of anything. Anyhow, after he died, my mother moved the family away to live with relatives. I came back here with my husband. I was too busy raising kids to worry about the caves. Then the fish company bought the land and the old whaling station, and no one could get out there."
"Are there more pictures?"
She shook her head.
"Papa tried to make a map of the caves, but I don't know what happened to it. He said the people who made the paintings were smart. They used pictures of fish and birds like signs. As long as you follow the right fish, you won't get lost. Some of the caves lead to blind alleys."
They talked into the night. Austin finally looked at his watch and said he had to go. Pia wouldn't let him leave until he agreed to return for dinner the next evening. He drove along the deserted road in the dusky light that passes for night in northern climes. A light was on at the main house, but he saw no sign of Jepsen and guests. He had gone to bed. The rain had ended. He went out on the porch and stood there a while, looking down on the quiet village and harbor, then went back inside the cottage and got ready to sack out. Although the remote village seemed peaceful, he couldn't shake the uneasy feeling that Skalshaun was a place of dark secrets. Before he turned in, he made sure the door and windows were locked.